Okay, this is your hour now. We're going to take your phone calls with Brother Guy Consolmagno as we talk about all things space. What an incredible mind. This is exciting, actually. So we'll be back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Brother Guy, what do you think of the multiverse theory now? Do you think that's got some credence to it?
It could, it couldn't. The difficulty with any of these ideas about putting different universes together is, how do you test it? Does it make predictions that you say, all right, if it's true, this would happen. If it's not true, that would happen. Because you're talking about the possibility of universes beyond what we could see. And if they're beyond what we could see, how would we know they were there? The funny thing is, there are some ways that you actually can predict some versions of the multiverse theory. So I'll hold on and see if they turn out or not.
You never know. There's so many things out there. Sometimes, you know, we talk about planes of existence, different dimensions. I sometimes think heaven and hell might be all part of that, one and the same.
It's probably more complicated than that. But beyond that, I'm really not sure I could even put words to it. All we can do is express things in terms of the words we know. We talked earlier about how, you know, little kids have very simple ideas that grow as people grow. And we're all children still, when it comes to trying to understand the universe and all the different ways that it works. We're still grasping for language to come up with, you know, to match the ideas we have, the insights we have.
What's new in the world of science? What's up there? What's on the cutting edge out there?
Well, there's a couple of fun things going on. One of the things that's gotten a lot of attention, we talked a little bit about the planets in habitable zones. But the exciting thing is not just that they're finding planets that are in places where you could have life, but they're finding planets now that are small enough that it would be comfortable, even in a spacesuit, for people to walk around on. It's really hard to find small planets. Well, because they're small. And compared to the big planets like Jupiter and Saturn, even Earth is small. But this Kepler spacecraft now has found a planet that's only about twice as big as Earth, and they've confirmed that it's there. And the reason it takes so long is that the way they find it is they have the planet passing right in front of the star so that the star they're looking at dims out, then comes back bright. You have to wait for it to occur again twice more before you can be sure you actually saw a planet and not just some other kind of glitch, right? So
that's right.
They had to wait for basically three passages. That means 2 years if something's going to take a year to go around the sun like our Earth takes to go around our sun. So it's been 2 years since they've had the Kepler spacecraft up there, and they've confirmed that this planet is dimming the light as if it were only about twice as big as the Earth. I've heard rumors that even other stars, even other smaller planets are being found. So stay tuned. We are beginning to find places in our own galaxy where there are planets like Earth, and all the things that we read about as science fiction, in some ways, we're able to put names and places and possibilities to what were just dreams.
That is exciting.
It's a fantastic time to be alive.
Yep.
It's a fantastic time to be a scientist because, you know, think back to when we were growing up. We never really left the Earth until, you know, when we were kids. We never knew that for sure that there were planets. We always thought there would be, but it's been kind of a relief. And to find that there actually are planets around other stars, and to find that they're, in a lot of ways, really different from what we expected. Here's another crazy thing to throw out. The whole idea of a habitable zone means a place where there's water available. Well, you don't have to be just a certain distance from a star to have water, because we now know that the moons of Jupiter and the moons of Saturn are made of ice, but they're warmer inside and probably have oceans of water underneath that ice crust, the part that we can see, but liquid, maybe full of minerals, maybe full of all the elements you'd want for intelligent tuna to be swimming around.
Would that be something if it had bizarre fish life in there?
Absolutely. Let's pretend that you're an intelligent tuna swimming in the oceans of the moon Europa going around Jupiter. Now, you're intelligent. You know that there's a top to your universe because there's ice at the top. You know there's a bottom to your universe because there's dirt down there as you get to the iron and the rocky core. And if you keep swimming in one direction, you go all the way around the planet and meet yourself again. That's the only universe you would ever know. How would you even know that there were stars? Because your top would be covered by this icy crust. How would you know that, in fact, you're in a moon that's orbiting a bigger planet, that's orbiting a star, that's orbiting the center of a galaxy, that's part of a cluster of galaxies, and on and on and on? There'd be no way that an intelligent tuna would be able to know that.
No, there's no way.
And then you ask, all right, what are the things that we don't know that we don't know? What are the boundaries that are part of our universe that we even can't be aware of that we're running into? Kind of, it's humbling, but it's also a lot of fun to think about.
It is. Are you familiar at all, Guy, with the work of Zechariah Sitchin, the late Zechariah Sitchin?
That work, I don't know. The philosophers and the speculators in these things, I tell you where I get a lot of my ideas, is science fiction.
Okay, well, this could be. I mean, his theory is he interpreted the Sumerian tablets, mm-hmm. and he has concluded, now he's no longer with us, died at the age of 90, that there is a extra planet in the solar system, and regardless of the theory that came with it, that there were intelligent beings on it and they came here, mm-hmm. and everything else, but he does claim it's on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit. If there's a planet out there on that kind of an orbit, 3,600 years, is it possible we just haven't found it yet?
Of course. We're discovering trans-Neptunian bodies all the time. After Pluto was discovered, it was 50 years before we found anything else. And the first one that was Pluto-sized, really, was only found about 10 years ago. Now, these turn out to be bodies that are two or three times as far away as Pluto. If you had, so in astronomical units, if the distance from the Sun to the Earth is 1 AU, and the distance from the Sun to Pluto is, say, 40 AU, we're talking objects that are maybe 50, 60, 70 astronomical units away. There could be, for all we know, objects, if there was something 100 or 200 astronomical units away the size of Mars, we wouldn't know about it. If it were on a path that was about to reach us in the next couple of years, then it would be close enough. We'd know.
Then we'd know. But if it was way out there, if it was on 2,400 years of this 3,600-year elliptical orbit, we might not see it.
Right, exactly. We do know that there are comets, right? We see comets coming in on orbits that take a million years to complete one orbit. And we see roughly one such comet every year. All right, if it takes a million years for that comet to return, we see one a year, how many comets like that are there out there that we haven't seen yet, that we haven't seen this year?
That's right.
And the answer is, at minimum, a million of them. So we can conclude that there is this cloud of comets out there. We call it the Oort cloud, because the guy who first made that calculation was astronomer Jan Oort, back in 1950, we can conclude that at least that stuff is out there. No, the inventory of the solar system is not complete. We don't know at all.
Not at all. I'm going to take some calls, but before I do, one more question. These comets that we see, did they originate in our solar system, or did they come from maybe even beyond the Milky Way galaxy?
Almost certainly not from beyond the Milky Way, simply because those distances are so enormous that I can't imagine ice even being stable and not evaporating away, even at those very tall temperatures,
yeah.
The amount of time it would take. We actually think we know where they came from. We think that they are the ice that was in the region of Jupiter as Jupiter was forming, and Jupiter's gravity is what scattered them out to the cloud where they are now. So it's ironic that the comets that are now much farther away, 10,000 astronomical units away, may have come from closer to the Sun originally than the comets that are merely out by Pluto, because they got scattered out there. That's this year's theory. We'll see what happens 50 years from now.
Let's go to Robin in the Bronx in New York. Go ahead, Robin. You're up with us.
Hi, Donald, George, and brother.
First, I want to give props to the Jesuits for all they do in the lifetime of the human race. I have a little theory that about why we're here. I figure we're just bites in God's CPU, you know, like, you know, as we manifest as spirit into physical beings, you know, how you put data in a computer, you have to press the key, you know, you have to press, uh-huh. So you want to put Q on the computer, you have to press Q, and so on and so forth. So I figure we're like God's CPU, you know, when we're living on Earth, we're doing the physical data for God, you know, and then I guess when we die, we go into that file in the sky, you know?
Well, as long as it's not the bit bucket in the sky. Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, the great thing about computers is that it's given us this whole new collection of images for explaining things that we experienced as intelligent beings that we never had the words for before. One image that, you know, to try to understand what a soul is, what if you had two identical computers, two laptops, say, and they're both brand new, they're both from the factory, but they have two different operating systems on them. They have two different sets of files. Now, if they were in a foreign language or in a language you didn't recognize, all you'd be able to see are hard disks that had grains of metal, which is where this information is stored, and it would look all random and crazy to you. Even if you could open it up and push the button and see things on the screen, if it was in a foreign language, it would be meaningless. The difference between one computer and another is the information in it. But the information is only information and only has meaning when there's a human being reading it. That's a way of thinking of the difference between physical reality and a spiritual reality. I'm not saying that we're programs in a computer. I'm saying this is a wonderful image to give us an analogy to start thinking about what our existence means and how we can explain it in terms of the very real physical reality we all experience. And the things that are more than physical, whether it's love or beauty or wonder, all of these things that make us human beings and more than just computers.
There you go, Robin. Thank you. Appreciate it. Ray in Santa Barbara, you're up on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, George.
Hey.
Hello.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, George, for you... keep chew on this for a second, okay? Everything is nothing, and nothing is everything. Okay,
so you're trying to baffle me even more, right?
No. Everything is not. This is Buddhism. Everything is nothing. Nothing is everything. Okay, they are one and the same, never separate. Anyway, another thing I like to say is I have a question, part question for Brother Guy and. I wanted to say that, you know, all the bases of these religions on this planet are astrotheological. They come from the study of the stars. So the images and the feelings and all that all come from that study of the stars. Now I would like to ask Brother Guy, what does he think now that the Piscean era is over and the Jesus Christ avatar is represented by the fish? And that era is over. What new and improved mythological sun god is the Roman Catholic Church going to come up with now that we are entering into this to the age of Aquarius? Thank you.
Oh, my. First, you're quoting, nothing is everything, everything is nothing. It sounds like an old song from Pete Townsend. And now you're quoting the age of Aquarius. I think we're all from leftovers from the 60s. That's wonderful. Obviously, there's more to religion, I think, than the interpretation you're putting on it. But I do think it's fascinating how people have always looked to astronomy and the stars to try to connect up with the things in their own life that are mysterious, whether it's something as simple as attempting to connect the positions of planets or the positions of stars with things in their life, or in a more meta way, in a deeper way, simply saying, the beauty that I see there is speaking to the beauty that I feel in my own soul, which is more the way I would interpret it.
Steve in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're up with us. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hey. Go Pack, go, by the way. I'm a diehard Roman Catholic here. I was born raised Roman Catholic, and I had some stuff that I wanted to ask because of the fact that I've been reading on the internet and some stuff that troubled me on the internet. But first off, the Bible code, I wanted to know have you heard of that, and what do you think of that? The other thing is, the saying, you know, in the Bible, so as it is above is so as it is below, you know, and greater is he that is within me than he that is within the world. So I guess one of my main questions is Satan and his dominion, is he a physical being as well as a spiritual being? Because the stuff I've seen on the net, it looks like millions of years ago or billions of years ago, there was some connection between the planet Saturn and the Earth. And if you've looked at anything, if you've ever seen anything on YouTube, on the internet, you know.
Well, let's ask Brother Guy. Brother Guy, I don't know if this is down your bailiwick or not.
Well, a little bit. First of all, hi to Green Bay. My brother's up in the UP, so hope you're having good weather up there.
They'll never lose. They never lose in football.
Oh, my. Most of what I find on the internet, I don't trust. And it's not just that it's wrong, but also that often it's almost right. And so you get, you know, you see five things, you go, oh, that sounds good, that sounds good. And then you get suckered in by the one bit that isn't good. It's just, it's unreliable. So it's good some moments and then wrong of it. It's like having a meter that you're using to test whether the electricity flows. You want it to work all the time. If it only works most of the time and it says there's no electricity now and you touch the wire, you find out, well, that's the time it didn't work. Then you get burned. So these things that you find, like the Bible code and these attempts to dig out hidden messages in religion, it's something called Gnosticism, and it's been around since religion has been around. The idea is that there's secret knowledge that they're not telling you about, that that only I know, and that makes me one up and everyone else. There may be knowledge there, but it's not all that secret. It wouldn't be on the internet if it was actually secret. And it's not all that reliable. The last question, though, the one that I really would like to get into is this idea of, is Satan physical or not? Evil, and Satan is our picture to describe the existence of evil in the world. Anybody who doubts the existence of evil hasn't been paying attention. Is it a physical? It's obviously expressed in the physical world, you know, the hunger that I feel because someone has denied me food. That's evil, and I'm feeling it in the physical world. But evil is, in Catholic theology, the absence of good. Any place where we withdraw and don't do the good we should do, evil exists as that gap. And that gap feels and makes itself known in the physical world, but isn't itself in existence.
Brother Guy, we're coming back with some final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Brother Guy with us on our next Coast to Coast show. David Schrader joins us. It's called The Other Side. And make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast show. Let's come back in a moment and take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Brother Guy, was the Vatican involved in the decision to boot out Pluto as a planet?
It was, yeah. We had a couple of roles in that because that was done by the International Astronomical Union, which is this organization of astronomers from around the world, and the Vatican as a nation is part of that. But in particular, the first committee to try to come up with a solution had all the different officers, including me, of the different planetary groups. We weren't able to come up with a solution that satisfied everybody. And the final decision, which was at least the wording of it, was written by another Vatican astronomer, Chris Corbelly, who was on the committee that had to come up with a final say of it. So we were kind of in the thick of all of this. My opinion changed, by the way, on Pluto. I started out thinking, for sure, it's a planet. That's the way I grew up. Why not keep it that way?
Sure.
But as I, and certainly, as someone who studies the geology of planets, you know, Pluto is big enough, it's got an atmosphere, it's got geology going on. To me, that makes it a planet. But then I talk to people who do other studies of planets more than what I do, the dynamics of how the systems are formed, how they move around with time. And I realized Pluto didn't fit where the other ones go. It's part of a totally new category of objects we didn't even know were there before. Finally, I was giving a talk about this, and someone came up afterwards and said, I remember now what this makes me think of. When Pluto was considered a planet, it was an ugly duckling of a planet. It had the wrong kind of orbit and the wrong kind of inclination and the wrong size and just looks funny. Now that we know that it is the classic example of a whole collection, there's about a dozen objects that fit in with Pluto in what we are now calling dwarf planets, it's a beautiful swan because it's something different from what it was trying to be. And I like that. I'd say, yeah, Pluto is beautiful as an example of what it is.
What determines what is a planet and what is a Pluto?
Well, planets are sort of the bones, the skeleton of a planetary system. They're the big objects whose gravity determines what else is going to be around and where it's going to be. So they're not only big enough that they're big and round and you could walk around on them or fly a spaceship around them, but their gravity extends way out beyond where they are. So Neptune, for example, is a planet. Neptune controls anything that comes by it. Neptune controls the orbit of Pluto. If you were able to push Neptune out, Pluto would move to keep up with Neptune. If you pushed Pluto in, Neptune would push Pluto back to where it used to be. So Neptune's the underlying structure. Pluto is the next level down. But still, Pluto is bigger than a lump of rock like an asteroid because, as I say, it's big enough to have an atmosphere and big enough for things going on. So that's why I say now we see three different groups, those that kind of determine the geography of the area, those that are still interesting places to walk around on and have adventures, and then those that are lumps of rock that maybe we can mine for metals.
Dumb question 101. Why are planets round?
Ah, it's because of gravity. And there are two forces that counter each other. Gravity wants to pull everything together, and the physical strength of the object wants to make it have its own shape. So, you know, if you have a pen in your hand, that pen has mass. That mass has a little bit of gravity, but the strength of the plastic that makes the pen a pen shape and not round.
Right.
Water doesn't have a whole lot of strength, so a droplet of water is round. The bigger the body, the bigger the force of gravity. But the physical strength doesn't change. So if you made a pen bigger, it wouldn't be a bigger pen, a stronger pen. It would still be the same plastic. There's going to be a point where the gravity force suddenly is bigger than the physical strength force. And at that point, it all collapses together into a ball. We actually see that in the asteroid belt, where you stop having asteroids and you start having dwarf planets. It's at around 400 or so kilometers in radius, which is just about the size of the asteroid Vesta, the one that the NASA spacecraft is going around right now. So it's an interesting intermediate case, that particular asteroid, which makes it so much fun.
Did the planets, Brother Guy, form as they were, you know, gases, and then they hardened? I mean, I'm picturing, you know, when I think of something like a solid mass, I'm thinking of like molten iron, and then all of a sudden, you know, you cool it and it's solid. Is that what the planets did?
Well, it sort of. What happens, this is our best guess now, and you can see it happening around other stars nowadays, which we couldn't before. You start out with a lot of dust, and because it's in orbit, gravity causes the dust from the top and the bottom to collapse, but the stuff in the plane of the orbit stays supported by its own centrifugal force. So you've got this disk of dust. And the dust sort of gathers together and sticks together and makes big dust bunnies, and they begin to run into each other, and they begin to crush each other. And one is going to be a little bit bigger than the other, so it begins to attract other things. As it attracts things, it starts making lumps of stuff. The lumps of stuff begin hitting together and snowballing. As it gets bigger, the things hit with more force until finally, every time it hits, it arrives with enough force to cause the stuff that it hits to melt. And that's where you go from dust to these molten lumps that eventually become planets. So you do start with cold dust. As it falls together, it takes, you know, a few million years, it will form semi-molten to molten lumps, which then will freeze up. And if they're big enough, they're soft enough, then they can form into what's going to be a round shape as the gravity pulls it equally in all directions.
And here we are. Let's go to the phones. It's Don Stern, Salem, Oregon. Go ahead, Don. Thanks for calling.
Merry Christmas, gentlemen.
You too, Don.
Hey, Brother Guy, can I use that intelligent tuna phrase and sell it to a rock band for a name?
Oh, there's already a hot tuna out there, so yeah, you got to make sure you don't confuse.
Yeah, we're about the same age, Dan. I thought that's where you were going to go.
I saw them when I was a freshman in college. That's how old I am.
Oh, boy. I've got a couple of granddaughters. One is 7, the other one's soon to be 5. And when you were talking about that story about that little girl, Brother Guy, you know, knowing what all these all the terminology was.
Yeah.
I've got 2 of them. And they,
oh, my.
They read my astronomy magazines. They're bouncing this off me and bouncing that off me and all that stuff. And if you guys could do me a major favor, I'm recording this because, George, they are 2 of your biggest fans. Because
okay.
I play these tapes back. If you can just say, hi, girls, Merry Christmas, something like that, that would be cool. And then I have another question.
You want me to do that now?
If you would.
Hi, girls, Merry Christmas from George Norrie at Coast to Coast AM. There you go.
And Merry Christmas from Rome.
Hey, I was going to ask you how the weather is, but my question for you, Brother Guy, is Curiosity, the new probe to Mars, what is your opinion on that? What do you think it's going to accomplish? And I'll get off and listen on the air.
All right.
Okay, well, first of all, let me give a shout-out to a favorite book that's not mine. It was written by H.A. Rey, who's the guy who wrote the Curious George books, and he wrote the best book for kids on looking at the stars and picking out the constellations, called The Stars. And I got it when I was about in the 4th grade, and I still use it. It's a wonderful book for kids. It's a wonderful book for grown-ups, for that matter. So anyway, the Curiosity probe, I'm real excited about it. It's about the size of an SUV. It got launched a couple of weeks ago. It's on its way to Mars. It'll take about 6 months to get there. And it will actually be able to land and go places that, you know, the probes that we sent now were expected to last about 6 months. They've lasted 8 years. Who knows how long this one's going to last? Go into places and use the things we've learned from the previous probes to ask more sophisticated questions about the material that it's finding. Future probes are even hoping to start to gather materials, pick them up and store them and cache them in some place so that maybe in the future, when we have a lander come by that could actually get off of Mars, we'd have a sample of rocks from around the world. This one won't do that, but the next generation's up to that one. I have a friend, an engineer at JPL, who's helped building them, and he always crosses his fingers because he knows how complicated these are. And, you know, half the probes we send to Mars wind up failing somewhere along the way because it's such a difficult job. And yet, you know, we've had great luck with the last ones, and boy, have my fingers crossed for this one.
All right, let's go back to the Bronx. Vic's with us. Go ahead, Vic. Thanks for holding.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening to you.
I believe in God because everything is just too tailor-made for us humans. He created everything for us, his creations, and the sub-creatures, if you want to call them, the animals. We all thrive on everything. And my puny little mind says that the stars are nothing but decorations, really. I mean, can you imagine if they weren't there? It would just be black. I mean, but I'd like to ask Brother Guy, where we stand now, what is the sun? What keeps it going? If that's his greatest creation, the sun, it gives us everything.
And thank God it is going. What keeps it going? How come it doesn't just blow up on us?
Right. We think we understand the physics of what's going on deep inside the sun now. It's taken, you know, 150 years of playing with this stuff to get it to where we got it now. The most common material in the universe are protons and electrons, and we put a proton and electron together, you get a hydrogen atom. if you've got enough hydrogen, all of its gravity pushes it together so that four protons, will squeeze together to make what we call a helium atom. And in the process of this nuclear fusion, it gives off energy, and that energy is the light that powers the sun and all of the other stars. You're absolutely right that the universe is beautifully tailor-made for us. Now, I don't call that a proof of God, because as a cynic might say, yeah, if the universe wasn't tailor-made for us, we wouldn't be here to appreciate it. We wouldn't have survived. So there's, you know, you can turn it either way. Rather than using it as a proof of God, what I use it as is a way to appreciate the beauty of God. Believing in God, I can see God's expression in the universe. So the universe isn't God proving himself. It's the universe is God expressing himself. Beautiful,
well,
beautiful. Thank
well
you.
Said. Let's go to Escondido, California. Kirk's with us. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Okay, sir. Great. Thank you.
Love your show, and I'm especially loving this show, Brother Guy.
Thanks.
Just tagging on to that last comment, I do believe there's a specific order in the universe. And anyway, that curiosity regarding the universe kind of led me to some stuff again on the internet. And I have a question for you. I've recently discovered this guy, and I was wondering if you'd heard of him. He was a physicist as an undergraduate, and then did graduate studies in astronomy. And he was over at Caltech doing study on quasars. And he's got some amazing theories regarding UFOs and the phenomenon there in the universe. And I was wondering if you've heard of him. He's got a website.
What's his name?
Reasons.org. His name is Reasons.org. Hugh Ross. Have you heard of Hugh Ross?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yo, I know.
Hugh's been on the program before.
Yeah.
Has he? Oh, great. I'll have to go get a couple of those recordings and go back and listen to him, because I think he's just a great guy.
I think he's got a fun way of approaching things. He's definitely more on the Protestant side than I am, and probably holds a little closer line to trying to maintain biblical truth. But, I appreciate the stuff that he does, and I think he's a great communicator, too.
Well, in regards to that, glad you heard of him. When he speaks about the phenomenons of alien life or the manifestations that people supposedly are seeing,
mm-hmm.
do you get into the theories that, I can't remember who it was, somebody got a Nobel Prize, and I guess one of the quotes was that our mind is a machine that a ghost can operate? In other words, these phenomena are actually manipulations of our own brains. We're not really seeing reality as it is because these... I'm not going to call them aliens. I guess they're demons impersonating aliens and all kinds of other manifestations, including loved ones that have passed on, et cetera. But what's your take on that?
Oh, I'm not going to get into that one. There are any number of philosophies that go on the question of how much is the reality that we see and how much is what we're imposing on it from something else. Ultimately, we can't tell. To me, the real question is, does it affect the way we live? I mean, is it going to change me from loving my neighbor? Is it going to change me from doing the right thing? I hope not, because regardless of the ultimate underlying meaning of reality, I believe that there are some things that are important, like doing good, avoiding evil, loving the creator of all. And those things stay the same regardless of how many levels of reality you're going to attempt to impose on the universe. I'm much simpler. I believe what I see.
By the way, that was Nobel Prize winning neuropsychologist, Dr. Sir John Eccles.
Ah, you're more on top of this stuff than I am. It's your business, I guess.
Well, I better be, huh?
Yeah.
I better be. Only got about a minute and a half or so to go. We might be able to get one more in. Let's go to Greenville, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Matt. Let's give it a shot. Matt, you with us? Well, he's no longer with us. He's gone now. Oh, well. Let's go to Andy in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Andy.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Brother Guy. It's an honor to speak with both of you. I would like to highly recommend a book to you, Brother Guy. It's by Whitley Strieber. It's called The Key. And it has some very profound insights about God, about the universe, and about what our purpose on Earth is. So if you get a chance, please take a look at that book. And I do recommend that book to everyone else as well in the audience. It's a very profound book.
All right. We shall do that. And Brother Guy, we're running out of time, but I wanted to, would you please mention your websites?
Okay. Well, you can find out all about the Vatican Observatory at vaticanobservatory.org. And from there, you can find out what I'm up to and the other guys at the observatory. And to all of you, have a great holiday season.
You too, and enjoy everything. If I ever get to Rome, we'll look you up, okay? How long are you going to be out there?
Well, I'm back and forth. I'm here about half the year, and I've been here for 18 years, so.
Okay, we'll find you out there. Brother Guy, Consul Magno. And, of course, his two works, God's Mechanics, Turn Left at Orion. For David Bujinski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lautasore, Tim Banal, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.